Welcome to Urban Dharma, the podcast, where suffering is optional. Hi, this is Reverend Kusla coming to you from downtown Los Angeles, from the International Buddhist Meditation Center in the heart of Koreatown. Well, it's a warm and sunny morning in November, and the podcast you're about to hear is an interview I did last month with Achan Siddhanto. We were both at the Monks in the West 2 gathering in Collegeville, Minnesota, and I asked him if I could interview him about his life and practice as a Buddhist monk in the Achan Sha forest tradition of Thailand, and he consented. So what you're about to hear is that interview. Hope you find it interesting. Hope you find it useful. So without further introduction, my interview with Achan Siddhanto from Abhayagiri Buddhist Monastery in Northern California. I'm sitting here with Achan Siddhanto, and I'm at the Second Monks in the West Conference in Minnesota, specifically Collegeville, Minnesota, and we are in St. John's Abbey right now. And Achan Siddhanto has agreed to do a short interview with me. And so the first question I have for you, Achan Siddhanto, is have you always been a Buddhist, or did you convert?
Well, it's funny sitting here in a Catholic monastery being a Buddhist monk, because sort of my family was Catholics, and I grew up Catholic and went to Catholic school. But like many people in my teenage years, kind of that sort of lost some of its meaning. I enjoyed, as a youth, being Catholic, and I was fairly active in the church and was an altar boy and all those good things. Mm-hmm. And it was a positive experience for me. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't make it relevant as I got a little bit older. Some of the questions that naturally come up in life were hard for me to answer, and the people right immediately around me couldn't answer those in a satisfactory way, and so religion started and became a bit irrelevant for quite a period of my life.
And what was it about Buddhism that sort of made sense to you? Was it immediate? You heard some of the Buddha, teachings of the Buddha, and you said, yeah, that's the kind of truth I've been looking for? Or was it a gradual?
It was really gradual. I mean, I really didn't become reinterested in Buddhism or religion until I was in college. When I was in college, I sort of read quite widely all kinds of things. Literature and books that had some sort of quest for meaning and truth were something that sort of stood out and appealed to me. I studied world religion somewhat. I was an art major, so I took a lot of art history, and one of the classes I took was Indian art history. And through that, you study the religions that were prevalent in India.
Okay.
Namely, the Vedic traditions, or Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam. Mm-hmm. And in the context of an art history course, you don't go into those in depth. Mm-hmm. But I had a great interest in Eastern religions, and that gave me a bit more of a push to kind of start reading and understanding more, in particular sort of Hindu teachings and Buddhist teachings. Mm-hmm. I did a lot more kind of reading, and I was very interested in particular the theology of that. Mm-hmm. And those religions of the East, as well as the promise that they held in terms of an individual who's seeking kind of deeper meaning and truth in life, has an access to a set of practices, in particular meditation and yoga, that can help further that sort of search for meaning and truth. And it's in that context that I, sort of just gradually started to read and study and become a bit more exposed to those things. And then after I did a little bit of a training in yoga at that time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in my yoga class, we learned a little bit about breath meditation. And Fortunately, I had a good experience with it.
Oh, good.
I wasn't a good yogi, and I wasn't a good meditator.
Yeah.
But I was able to sort of recognize, sort of after one of my classes one day, that I felt energized and centered and kind of balanced in a way that I'd never felt before.
Mm.
And in that kind of context, I sort of got a sense of inspiration and faith that, you know, there really was something to those practices of yoga and meditation. And I made a determination, okay, I'm going to find out more about this.
Mm.
And this is something I need to really explore.
Now, you're ordained in the Achan Sha forest tradition of Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the different kinds of Buddhism out there, it's almost, if you're a Christian, there's so many different kinds of Christianity. If you're a Buddhist, there's so many different kinds of Buddhism. What drew you to investigate and eventually become ordained in the Thai forest tradition?
Well, that's a good question. You know, especially in America here, it's as if, you know, all these kind of spiritual traditions now are available and open to us, and
mm-hmm.
it's almost like walking down a supermarket aisle and trying to pick out the right cereal for your breakfast.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's kind of a daunting position to be in. But my own story, it was one where it was just really natural progression.
Hmm.
You know, from being interested in Buddhism and Hinduism, after I finished college, I went to India for a period of travel and looking for places where I could sort of train in those traditions somewhat, and just as I was traveling there, my focus became more on Buddhism. I met some Buddhist monks, learned about opportunities to train as a Buddhist monk as a Westerner, which is something I hadn't any idea that was something I could do.
And then
about a year of traveling around, I went to Thailand to specifically to sort of take up a more deeper practice, not yet to be a monk, although mm-hmm. I knew that was something that I was interested in and a possibility,
was
but just to get really focused, just to get some real deep training in that.
Okay. But was Thailand close to India? Is that why you went to Thailand? Is it a Burma, Sri Lanka, Cambodia? What was it about Thailand? Did you have a ticket for Thailand? Or
well,
you just wanted to go to Thailand?
Two things. This monk that I had met, who was a Dutch man who had ordained as a monk in Sri Lanka and trained there for many years, when I met him traveling in India and talked to him about opportunities for Westerners to train and become a monk, he sort of said, "Well, you could, if you were interested, this is something you could do. You could ordain here in India. You could go to Sri Lanka. You could go to Burma." But probably the best place to go would be Thailand.
Okay.
And he said, there's an international sort of monastery there, which is quite good. And the conditions in the country are quite good.
And when you say international monastery, does that mean there were Westerners there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as well as people from
other parts of Asia.
Parts of Asia. And mm-hmm. Yeah. And during the time I was there, even from, say, Russia and
wow.
South America or Central America.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's this, and then also as part of my travels, I spent some time in Hong Kong, and a friend of mine had a book of Ajahn Buddhadasa, who was a quite well-known Thai teacher.
Mm.
And he had a monastery, and they ran an international meditation center where they did retreats every month. And, up to that point, I hadn't really found a particular teacher or community or place where I felt like, this is where I want to go. This is it for me. And reading one of his books, I got a real sense of this is somebody I can trust. And this is a good place to get started. And by golly, I got to get down to this.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I'd been sort of wandering around and not really applying myself in a really focused and determined way.
And this international center, was it the forest center? Was it in the forest?
They had a forest setting there. That was
okay.
Wat Suan Mok in the south of Thailand.
Okay.
It's fairly well known to a lot of Westerners who've practiced meditation.
And what attracts you to the forest tradition? Because me, living in downtown Los Angeles, I have the forest of the urban environment. But you know, there's like spiders and snakes and leopards and tigers and all sorts of stuff, along with rain And, you know, it just sounds like a really difficult kind of Buddhism to do, and yet you're ordained in that tradition. What was it that sort of drew you out to the forest?
Well, I gained inspiration and faith in Thai monks who trained and lived in that way.
Okay.
And so to get training, I went into that sort of situation. It wasn't something that was a kind of, there was a lot of forethought to. Mm-hmm. It was just like, well, these teachers seem to know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I trust them. I'm going to go study with them.
Okay.
And then in that context, I got to know of this sort of forest-dwelling tradition of monks, which is something that has existed since the time of the Buddha.
Hmm.
And when you look at the suttas, the Buddha was born in the forest. He practiced in the forest. He realized the ultimate truth in the forest, and eventually he even died in the forest.
Yeah, that's right.
And so he, you know, his whole life was one that was set in a forest setting,
mm-hmm.
And he praised that as a really conducive setting for meditation practice, partially because of its tranquility, but also because of the simplicity of life in the forest.
Mm.
When I say forest here, or forest monastery, it's good to define that, because in the West we have all kinds of notions of what a forest is.
Sure.
I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, where the forest sort of runs for hundreds of miles in different directions, and is very rugged and mountainous. But in Asia, a forest monastery can be as simple as a small couple-acre patch of forest,
mm-hmm.
that's 20 minutes or half-hour walk from a few villages.
Okay,
you know,
I see what you're saying.
Especially rice farming villages. And so you're not completely sort of out in the wilderness,
mm-hmm.
But you have a setting that is natural, that's quiet, and somewhat removed from the hustle and bustle of village life or city
sure.
life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really came to find that presented a wonderful sort of balance,
mm-hmm.
between the extremes that spiritual seekers can often look for, which is a completely hermetic life or a completely sort of engaged life,
yeah.
you know, sort of right in the middle of the city with all
yeah.
that entails.
Yeah. Did you become ordained in the forest? Did you take your ordination in Thailand?
I did.
You
yeah.
did?
Yeah. Okay. In a very short time, I found my way to the International Forest Monastery, which
mm-hmm.
was the monastery set up by Western disciples of Ajahn Chah, a very well-known forest master in Thailand. And I received ordination after about a year and a half of training, the higher ordination, at one of the branch monasteries of Ajahn Chah's. Trained there for 5-6 years before I ended up coming to America to spend time here.
And I introduced you as Ajahn Sudanto. Is everybody who is ordained called an Ajahn?
Well, Ajahn is a Thai word
uh-huh.
that means teacher.
Okay.
And the monks traditionally were seen as teachers in the society.
Mm-hmm.
Until modern times, they were pretty much the only teachers. They taught secular as well as religious subjects.
Mm. Okay.
Somebody who wanted to seek knowledge would go to the monastery to get some instruction or some classes. These days, the term is broader than that. So even a school teacher in a secondary or elementary school or a university, mm-hmm. would be called a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Or say somebody who's a yoga instructor or, you know, teaches something else. So it just means teacher.
And does it take a certain amount of time to become an Ajahn? Are you immediately, as a novice monk, you call that?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Actually, it's in Thailand, because monks have traditionally been the teachers,
okay.
it can be used in a really colloquial way to refer to a monk.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhat it's reserved for monks who have made a deeper commitment
okay.
to monastic training, and especially more senior monks who are often in the position and have the responsibilities of teaching people.
Okay.
Amongst the Western monks, they kind of reserve it for monks and nuns who have done at least 10 years of training.
So you've had 10 years at least of training then, and that's why you're known as Ajahn Sudanto.
Yeah, I received my higher ordination 12 years ago. So
okay.
A couple years ago, people started calling me Ajahn Sudanto.
Wonderful. Good. Now, to fast forward, you were in Thailand, you studied, you practiced, you took ordination, And now you're living in Northern California at Abayagiri. And I've been there, and really it was just fascinating to see where and how you live, much different from where and how I live. How did you, in your tradition, you can't cook. You need a large support base. You need lay people to support you, the Sangha, the monastery. Did they invite you, the Abayagiri monks, to come? Did they say, we'll give you land and we'll support you? Or did you go there and say, I'd like to start a place? How did that all turn out?
Well, I kind of joined Abayagiri Monastery sort of in progress.
Okay.
So it had been founded in 1996 after about 10 years of work with lay people connected to our tradition, making mm-hmm. an invitation of the Western monks to establish a monastery here, as they've done in many other places in the world, Australia, New Zealand, several in England, several in Europe, now there's some in Canada. So they wanted one here in America. They didn't want to have to go to Thailand or England or Australia every time they wanted to visit a monastery and get some teachings from monks. And so they developed a foundation, and the monastery was already up and running for a couple of years by the time I came here.
And was it your choice to go there, or did somebody invite you to go there?
It was really both. I mean, we have quite a lot of freedom to move between communities.
Okay.
How I came to Abayagiri was, I'd been in Asia for quite a few years training, and sort of talking to my teacher, he suggested that I might like to come to America and spend some time with Ajahn Pasana so I could be a bit closer to my family and visit my family. Ajahn Pasana is the co-abbot mm-hmm. of Abayagiri, and he was also the abbot of the monastery when I first joined the monastery in Thailand.
I see.
So I had a previous connection with him,
okay.
And it was very both easy and interesting, mm-hmm. To come back to America,
yeah.
and to live and train under him in this emerging new monastery
yeah.
that they were building in Northern California.
And we were talking earlier in the week that the last year or two has really been devoted to building and making it larger and more accessible, and more cabins have been built for future monks or current monks visiting. What have you learned being a monk in Northern California? You know, you're an American. You went to Thailand, became ordained, but you came back to America. And gosh knows they have plenty of monks in Thailand. And it's nice to have more monks in America. But what have you seen now after your initial ordination? And now you look back and you 12 years, and you say, what have I learned? Is it profound? Is it simple? Is it deep? Is it what are some of the things you've come to recognize as being truth?
Well, that's kind of a broad question.
Yes, it is. But you can pick any one of those parts.
I can pick any one of those parts.
Any one of those parts.
One of the first things you were talking about was maybe what did I learn here in America, as opposed to maybe studying and training in Thailand.
Okay, yeah.
And what some of the differences are.
Yeah.
And, I really sort of, after training for several years, don't look so much to the particular environment as being so important, because the practice of Buddhist monasticism and on the deeper level, the practice of the Buddhist teachings are something that you just make do with wherever you are, the conditions that are there, and do the best you can to apply yourself to putting those practices into use for spiritual maturation and growth.
Okay.
So I don't really differentiate so much between Thailand and America.
Okay.
And the conditions that they provide, but they are very different situations.
As far as culture is concerned.
As far as culture, Thailand's been in Buddhism's been in Thailand for a long time.
Yeah.
But here in America, it's very new.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of different energy around being a Buddhist monk in America. One, in Thailand, being a Buddhist is to be in the majority. Sort of well over 90% of all Thais consider themselves Buddhist.
Okay.
And I'm just, when living in Thailand, I'm just one of 150,000 monks.
Sure.
Here in America, I'm one of a very small kind of grouping of, you know, one of the most extreme religious minorities.
Yeah.
You could say. Yeah. But it's one that over the last several decades has attracted some attention and prominence.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have even people that are building monasteries and training to be monastics here in the West.
Has your practice changed over 12 years? Or are you still doing the same practice you did 12 years ago?
You know, it has, mm-hmm. and it hasn't.
Okay.
The way it hasn't changed is a large part of the practice that we do at Abhayagiri is very similar to what we do in Thailand. We have a regular schedule. We get up early in the morning. We meditate. There's some time to sort of do chores and building work in the monastery, maintenance work. We eat communally. We have several hours a day where we're practicing by ourselves in our hut in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
We meet again in the evening and you know, have some discussion about the Buddha's teachings, a reading from a book while we have a cup of tea. And then we have another evening meditation and chanting session. We go back and practice and sleep in the forest in our huts. And we do that in Thailand, we do that in America, we do that in England, we do that wherever we are.
Yeah.
In the forest, in the city.
Yeah.
This is how we live. So that part hasn't really changed much. And all the teachings of the Buddha are practiced wherever we go.
Okay.
The part that's probably changed is something that's more superficial. It has to do more with, in Thailand, there's a wealth of monasteries and monastic communities, and in America or in the West, there's very few.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one thing that's quite different is there's a lot more energy put into teaching, writing and publishing books, websites, connecting with the other sort of faith and religions that exist.
Sort of a real strong emphasis on education. People coming wanting to find out about the Dharma. So you make books available, you have retreats, people can come and hear Buddhist monks talk about the Dharma.
Yeah. In Thailand they come to the monastery. And also there's so many monasteries and so many monks that sort of people that have a real strong interest, that kind of work is shared out.
Yeah, and it's been there for such a long time.
Yeah.
There's so many more monks over there that the Buddhism to a lot of Americans, a lot of Westerners, a brand new religion for them.
Yeah.
Never even thought about it. So I bet you get a lot of people who just don't even know the basics. And, you know, what are the Four Noble Truths? What's the Eightfold Path?
Yeah.
And you start right at the beginning with them, huh?
We start right at the beginning. Or we start where they are.
Yeah, we start where they are, exactly.
So, some people have even been, you know, practicing meditation maybe for a long time and have some exposure to Buddhist concepts, but maybe not kind of real foundational sort of Buddhist teachings.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been doing all kinds of meditation retreats and meditating for a long time and have never really examined the Four Noble Truths in any depth or detail, or maybe haven't found a way to connect those with what the meditation does for them.
Exactly.
And so that is a big part of the teaching that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then also one of the other big differences is you know, developing monasteries and monastic communities in the West. It takes a lot of our energy.
Yeah. Planting the seed, huh?
Yeah.
That's good. Now, you have a website called abhayagiri.org. Is that the www.abhayagiri.org?
That's it.
And on the website, you have Dharma Talks available for free download,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have books in PDF as well?
Yeah, we have e-books.
Okay, you have e-books?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of the books that we've published over the years,
mm-hmm.
We've sort of put into electronic form.
Okay.
So a lot of them are available in HTML, so you can just read them on the website. And then we've also put many of them into PDF form so people can download them and print them out or read them.
And then the audio files, MP3?
Yeah, so a lot of the teachings and talks that are given at the monastery we put up on our website too, so people can listen to those or download them and save them.
And for people listening to this podcast who may be close to California or thinking about coming to California, how often do you open your center, monastery, for public retreats? Do you have them on a regular basis, public teachings where people can come and listen in person?
Well, we have the monastery is not really a kind of closed resource. It's a public and an open resource in Buddhism. And so we always are open to the public year-round. And we have different ways that we share the monastery with people. You know, we have public talks twice a week, once on the lunar quarter, which follows the kind of quarter phases of the moon, and then also on Saturday nights. But also the monastery is open all the time, so we have neighbors and people that live in the area who come either on a daily basis or an occasional basis to join in our meditation. One of the other common ways people participate in the monastery is they'll come for a residential sort of stay. We don't have retreats at the monastery, public retreats, but there is an opportunity for people to come and stay in the monastery for a night, a week, a month, or even longer. And so people contact us from all over the country.
So the best way to find out about that would be to contact your monastery through the website to see what the availability is, that type of thing.
We don't have lots of space for visitors.
That's what I was thinking.
So we can't take drop-ins. But if people are interested in visiting, then we usually advise them to look at the website first and read about what visiting the monastery entails.
So there are pages up there they can read to give them good facts about how to appropriate behavior, where to park the car, that kind of stuff.
And what to expect, what to bring, what not to bring.
Okay, good, good.
And then there's an email address of the guest monk. So one of the monks in the monastery has the job and the responsibility of coordinating all the guests coming and going and setting up accommodations for them and answering all the questions that they have about coming and going and what's on offer at the monastery.
Excellent.
So we always encourage people, go to the website, read the information that's available there, and then if you still want to come, use that email address.
Okay, I like that. Now, I've been looking at my watch, and I know there's something planned in just like 7 minutes. So I don't want to keep you from that, but I want to thank you for taking the time at this conference to sit down with me and just do this really quick discussion, chat on your life as a monk. And hopefully people listening to this found it interesting and useful. And if they're curious about Abhayagiri and the Forest Thai tradition, www.abhayagiri.org. Could you spell Abhayagiri for me?
Yes. So, A-B-H... AYAGIRI.ORG.
Okay, thank you very much. And I want to thank you in a special way too, Achan Siddhanto, because I remember clearly a couple years ago we were at a monastic conference and you came up to me and you said, Kusala, have you ever heard of podcasts? And I said, well, sort of. And you said to me, well, have you ever thought about doing one? Because I think, you know, maybe the way you talk about Buddhism or that kind of stuff would be interesting to people. And I thought about that and figured out how to do it. So it's really all because of you that Urban Dharma, the podcast, found its way into reality. So I want to thank you on a personal basis for giving me that suggestion and encouraging me.
Well, you're most welcome, and I'm glad you've taken it up because I do think people really appreciate your take on Dhamma.
Oh, thank you. It's good. And again, thank you again, and I guess until we see each other later on this afternoon, have a good afternoon.
Thanks. You too.
Well, that's it. That was my interview with Achan Siddhanto, a monk at Abhayagiri Buddhist Monastery in Northern California. Hope you found it interesting. Hope you found it useful.
If you'd like to know more about me, please visit my website, kusala.info, kusala.info. If you'd like to hear more interviews and Dharma Talks, please visit dharmatalks.info. That's dharmatalks.info. A lot of free ebooks for download at buddhabooks.info. That's buddhabooks.info. So until the next time, until the next podcast, be happy, be peaceful, and most of all, be free from suffering.